For over 10 years, Mama Cares has been there for local musicians in their time of need, whether to help with medical expenses or other personal calamities. Madison Area Music Association invites you to Mama Cares' 10th Anniversary Ball, Sunday, March 30th, from 3 to 8 p.m. at the High Noon, featuring live performances by Sam Ness, Gin Chocolate and Bottle Rockets, and The Jimmies. Help your local musicians and enjoy some live music at the Mama Cares 10th Anniversary Ball, Sunday, March 30th, from 3 to 8 p.m. at the High Noon Saloon. You're listening to WORT Madison.
In Arabic, we say, Sam, Sam, Futter ala basale.
Translation. He fasted and fasted, and then broke his fast with an onion.
يعني بذل جهد كبير للقيام بعمل ما ولكن في نهاية الأمر كانت النتيجة سخيفة لا تليق بالجهد المبذول. It means that a lot of effort went into someone or something's project or accomplishment, but in the end the result was ridiculous and not worthy of the effort that was put in it. So fasting is refraining from eating or drinking.
Right.
So during the month of Ramadan, this comes back to me as a reminder that this fasting, when at the end of the day, one should continue the great reward, reaping of rewards by also not overeating. Eating an onion is fine in my book, but no, this is in reference to hard work that in the end ends up being not worthy of the effort, because technically, those who, let's say you're fasting all day,
right.
The idea is to feel the pain of the hunger, etc. So if you're sitting at the end of the day in front of a very lavish spread, that defeats the purpose of the said fast. But hey, it's such a tradition now that at the end of the day of fasting, families visit each other,
right.
And it's typically a spread,
It's not always the humblest fare available when you break your fast.
And that, in my humble opinion, it defies the purpose of said that. But this proverb is often used by someone who spends a lot of time doing something, creating something, and in the end it's not worthy of the effort put in it. It has nothing to do with the actual fasting.
Yeah, I have a handful of experiences like that.
Tell me more.
Yeah, now is probably not the time. But, I've gotten involved in some fairly complex projects that, when the project was done, it didn't really have the appeal and shine that one might have hoped for.
Yes.
Yes.
It happens. What's going on here today?
But, not to be disrespectful to the onion. I like onions quite a bit. I mean, not raw, like I don't eat them like apples, but,
And nowadays, this is when I think the proverb was used when onions were cheap. Some places in the Middle East where they're literally on the verge of starvation, an onion is considered a luxury.
Oh, I'm sure.
Beyond what bread, water, flour and water make bread, that's what most people are having.
Right. And the onion is like the icing on the cake.
That would be really nice.
Right.
What's wrong with the onion, you might say?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another installment of Salamat, your weekly tour of Arab and Arab-American news, culture, issues, art, music, food, proverbs, and, whatever other shenanigans we get up to.
That's Rowan Atallah on microphone one. translate their extraordinaire. My name is Sabi. We bring you this journey on the 23rd of March, 2025, also known as the wettest day of the year so far. It's just a lot of moisture, a misty, moisty Sunday afternoon.
It is, yeah. It's a little on the damp side out there.
And it's also the 23rd day of Ramadan. Speaking of fasting, in the year 1446 after Hijra in the Islamic calendar. Ramadan Kareem to all of you who are observing. Today's show will include a discussion of dates. We have briefly touched on dates. A date is a typical way to break one's fast.
Right.
One date and one small amount of soured milk.
Wait. What?
The Leban Iran.
Oh, okay.
The yogurt. It's yogurt.
Okay.
But it's most Americans
say soured milk. Most people, like, I think of... Yeah. Like that unattended carton of milk in the back of the refrigerator that's been there a really
kefir.
And
kefir is what it's called.
You take it out, it does not usually
look good.
Taste good, smell. Yeah, like but kefir is fine.
Kefir is fine, and then back in the day before refrigeration, Leban was one way to make milk survive beyond the milk stages of life, and they make yogurt and hardened yogurt, and then it's rehydrated with water on the day that you want to enjoy it. So Leban Iran or Shanin, it has many names in that part of the world, the Turkish culture.
So jamid is the stuff you have to rehydrate,
yes,
isn't it?
And the jamid is often just cooked, but back before refrigeration, the lebne, you make from milk, you make Leban. And then you drain the Leban, you enjoy the liquid, you enjoy it while it's in that stage, and then you dehydrate the yogurt enough to get it into ball form, and then it's dried. And in some cases, you just put it in some kind of a lamb broth, and you make the jamid, the actual broth that will end up being enjoyed in many dishes. So jamid is one of those products of hardened yogurt. But the tradition is something small like one date, a sip, a couple of ounces of that liquid, and then you perform the sunset prayers and then come back to enjoy your said breakfast. So in the U.S., California now, Southern California, Coachella Valley is... well recognized for growing dates, particularly the medjool. But we'll come back and talk about that after we start doing some local news and etc. So our food portion today
you're going to leave that out there as something to tantalize.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
A teaser.
Okay.
Just make sure people don't touch that dial. Who has a dial out there? Nobody. Just don't touch that. Don't set that phone down or whatever. However you consume WRT, do not touch that device.
So we do have for local offerings, we have a couple of upcoming community calendar events. A couple of recently posted Andalib Cartonera workshops. For those of you who are not familiar, Andalib Cartonera is an independent cardboard cover book press. They're based in Madison. It's run by a small team of volunteers. And essentially, they do these workshops where you can decorate a piece of cardboard to be used as a book cover for a printed pamphlet. Could be poetry, could be essays, could be art. And they've been doing these workshops around town, and if you participate in one, they're a lot of fun, by the way. I've been to a couple of them. And you can donate your creation to the organization, because they take displays of these around with them, or of course, you can take it home with you. So the next of these is just in 2 days, March 25th, Tuesday, 6 to 9 p.m. That is happening at Communication, which is at 2645 Milwaukee Street. These are all ages, and that one in particular, the one on the 25th, is masks required. The next one after that is Sunday, March 30th, from 2 to 5 p.m. at Room of One's Own Bookstore at 2717 Atwood Avenue.
Nice.
Looking a little bit further out on the calendar, the UW Middle East Studies program will be having their annual program conference This year's is entitled The Global Middle East. This is happening on April 10th from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's free and open to the public. It is an all-day symposium, and it's taking place at the Festival Room at Memorial Union on the UW campus. Again, that is Thursday, April 10th from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., the Global Middle East, the annual Middle East Studies Program Conference. There's going to be a full day of insightful political and cultural discussions, networking opportunities, and they have quite the lineup of speakers throughout the day.
That sounds fabulous.
Yes, and one step further out on the calendar, Mennonite Action is calling for communities of faith and conscience to come out to a protest, demand an end to the Israeli attacks on Gaza and the West Bank, and an end to U.S. offensive weapons shipments to Israel and restoration of humanitarian aid to Gaza. This is a public action of singing and prayer, Saturday, April 12th, 10 to 11 a.m. at the Dane County Farmers Market at the corner of King Street.
Excellent. And local news? I got one. I have one.
Okay.
Are we there yet?
Sammy, do you have something to tell the class?
Yes, speaking of classes, a driving school in Michigan, the second of its kind, was shut down by the people who, I guess, give them their licenses to operate. The driving school that shall remain nameless was run by an Arab American crew. Apparently, they were accused of not documenting enough information about the students that attend the school, and some of them are not completing the full required regimen of classes. I mean, who needs these classes? You know, all you need to drive is just get the keys to the car and just get in there and start driving.
Well, I mean, you know, in theory.
In theory. Right. In theory. And apparently, according to the the press release from Secretary of the state's office, the blessed driving school, that's its name, I kid you not, failed to maintain student records and could not provide them when they were requested. When the inspectors visited the place, they said, show us the roster where you keep said hours. We go, hey, trust me, man, they come here, they drive, and we know they drove 24 hours. And then they leave. You have to drive a certain number of hours. I don't think they drove them all consecutively. So the police department there run. Also, the police chief is an Arab American. He said, we don't want such shenanigans to continue because it's not safe to graduate people from a driving school unless they actually finish this the official training. You shouldn't be left there to learn on the road by running some people over.
So,
ready for food yet?
Well, we do have a couple. They're not really local other than local to the United States. But if you have been following the case of Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil, this was reported in Arab American News last Friday, that Wednesday of last week, in a positive development in his case, one of the leading figures, you know, remember, this is Mahmoud Khalil, is one of the leading figures now, anyway, in the protest movement on U.S. college campuses against the Israeli war on Gaza. But last Wednesday, a federal judge ordered the case to be transferred to a court in New Jersey from Louisiana, which was the hardline state chosen by the Trump administration for Khalil's deportation proceedings. Khalil was, of course, arrested on March 8th at his Columbia University residence in New York, briefly held in New Jersey before being transferred to an ICE facility in Gina, Louisiana.
And one of the worst, I hear, in the nation as far as safety among, they just throw you amongst the thugs and such.
I would not be surprised. So, and of course, if you've been following his case, you know there have been quite a few protests on his behalf. There was one in Milwaukee yesterday that we were at. Federal authorities had pushed to move the case of this graduate student to the strict immigration court in Louisiana. A judge in New York decided, you know, as we said, to transfer it to a New Jersey federal court. And they said the government first moved Mahmoud to Louisiana, then tried to transfer his federal case there as well, hoping to increase its chances in court. This is from Ramzi Kasim, a law professor at City University of New York and co-director of Creating Law Enforcement and Accountability and Responsibility, or CLEAR, which is a nonprofit legal organization which is currently representing Khalil. The judge rightly rejected this approach and referred the case to a court in the greater New York area near Mahmoud's residence, where the case and, more importantly, Mahmoud himself rightfully belong. We intend to bring him home soon. Khalil had recently graduated from Columbia and is a prominent voice in pro-Palestinian protests at the school.
And his name is Mahmoud Khalil.
Almost
every piece of news I hear, Mahmoud Khalil. I'm like, who's that?
No. So it's also important to note, like, no charges have been filed against Khalil.
So far.
No charges. Yep. And his arrest angered opponents of the Trump administration and free speech advocates. Big surprise. Mm-hmm. Including even some conservatives who believe such actions could have a chilling effect on freedom of expression.
Hey, some religious leaders condemned Trump's treatment of immigrants in general. And, you know, himself, Mr. Trump himself, or Presidente himself, presented himself as a defender of the Christian faith, according to a couple of church leaders here. But a growing number of them, these leaders, are denouncing his policies, including on immigration. And many are also taking aim at Christian nationalist ideology underpinning the actions of Mr. Trump. So the critics from the Jewish and the Christian religious groups have issued a statement in conjunction showing that the policies violate freedom of religion. And now some of them are taking a harder look at Mr. Trump's first month in office and determining whether it was worthy of the actual support at one point as a defender of the religious freedoms, and there it is, not fully defended.
That's right. So there was also specifically the Department of Homeland Security's decision rescinding its sensitive locations policy. Which the rescinding of that policy has basically green-lighted the interruption of religious services in order to arrest immigrants. And according to Jim Simpson, the executive director of the Center of Faith and Justice at Georgetown University, enforcement actions at places of worship interfere with religious activities and the ability of people of faith to fill their religious mandates. In mid-February, more than two dozen Christian and Jewish religious denominations and associations filed a lawsuit against lifting the sensitive locations policy.
Yes, so that's what one of the actual bishops said. In the span of just one, like a couple of weeks, we've seen language criminalizing our parishioners and neighbors and immigration enforcement actions, and the risk of normalizing a lack of respect for a core constituents, legal people who are here legally and they have legal protection. So there, you know, at one point you would have a green card and you would assume that unless you have really committed a crime and you've been charged with such, it's the only time you can be shackled, tagged and bagged and dragged out of state and back to wherever your homeland is. But now I guess it doesn't take that much.
Yep. In a related piece, again, this is coming from Arab American News, a judge last Thursday blocked the deportation of pro-Palestinian Georgetown University scholar Badr Khan Suri. The federal judge ordered immigration officials not to deport the scholar. He was detained by the Trump administration and accused of spreading anti-Israeli propaganda in a very similar fashion to Mahmoud Khalil. U.S. District Judge Patricia Tolliver Giles in Alexandria, Virginia, ordered that the Indian national shall not be removed from the United States unless and until the court issues a contrary order. Suri's attorney wrote in an earlier court filing that Suri was targeted because of his social media posts and his wife's identity as a Palestinian and her constitutionally protected speech.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, Surrey's attorney also argued that federal authorities had provided no evidence that he's committed any crimes and that his detention violates his free speech and due process rights.
Okay.
So no criminal record. He has a visa authorizing him to be in the U.S. as a visiting scholar, and his wife is a U.S. citizen.
Yep. And overseas, real quick, while the world is busy with some of the bits and pieces of news about the resumption of violence against the Palestinians in Gaza, in Israel, the security cabinet approved a plan to separate and legalize 13 settlement outposts in the occupied West Bank. Far-right finance minister Smotrich. Said Sunday that we continue to lead a revolution of normalization and regulation in the settlements. Instead of hiding and apologizing, we raise the flag, build and settle. This is another important step on the path of actual sovereignty in Judea and Samaria. This is what they call West Bank. By the way, it's not the West Bank. It was poorly misnamed for the last few thousand years.
And, yes.
According to some people. So there we go. We keep them busy with something, and we continue with the path of the plan from day one, which was to make it exclusively a Jewish state with no room for the Palestinians to create a state of their own or to actually reestablish their state in anything resembles a normal state. Do you like dates?
Do I like dates?
Yeah.
I like medjool
dates. The dates you
use. Yeah, I like medjool dates. I mean, the others are okay, but medjool is... it's hard to beat.
Well, the palm tree is one of the oldest fruit trees that has been cultivated by humans, and they carry a cultural and economic legacy spanning thousands of years, particularly in the Middle East and North Africa, the Arab world. However, the lesser-known story is how these delicious fruits were brought to the United States and are now growing in the desert. I drove through Yuma, which is south of Cachula Valley in Southern California. And in some places, as far as the eye can see, rows and rows of beautiful palm-bearing palm trees or date-bearing palm trees. California's Coachella. I'm going to pronounce it Coachella because two L's in Spanish is pronounced.
Yeah, I think all the locals just say Coachella though.
Coachella.
I mean,
Valley.
I only know that based on the music festival.
Yeah.
Coachella.
But it's now, it's not, it's just south of Palm Springs, and Palm Springs and north of that, the lake in central California. But the area is now known as the date capital of America. And by driving through there, I could tell that they're very proud of it. And they have stands and what have you. There's very date-related stuff. The fruits came to the United States somewhat in a coincidental method of last century. Production and consumption in the United States, especially in California, accounts for the majority of the date production, while other states like Arizona and Texas have a little bit, smaller scale. States like Wisconsin buys maybe one of the least states in the union to consume because, you know, we like cheese here more than dates. According to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Agriculture Marketing Resource Center says that California produced approximately 60,000 tons of dates in 2021 when they were keeping track. And that's a relatively modest figure compared to the largest producer in the world today is Egypt, due to the abundance of that kind of heat and near and around the river of the Nile. They produce 1.7 million tons in the same year, according to the world organizations that count the dates. Egypt is the world's largest date producer, according to Al Jazeera. But however, this is unfair to compare them because, surprising, when you look at the export figures from Egypt, they only exported 17,000 tons in 2022, while the U.S. exported 16,000 tons in the same year.
They exported 17,000 tons out of a total annual production of how much?
1.7 million tons. So that tells me that
they're eating most. Okay, all right.
They're
just
making
checking.
They're growing it to eat it. Where in the U.S. the export market has there's more infrastructure to export things and more marketing. So this turns out in favor. It makes it in favor in the United States in terms of the export revenue. With the United States earning 82.34 million compared to only 69.5 mil from the Egyptians. So this happened early last century. So Explorers Adventures, this is a program in the late 19th century. The U.S. the Department of Agriculture launched a program known as Agricultural Exporter of Explorers, quote unquote, a team of experts who traveled the world in search of new crops that could be grown in the U.S., in the United States of America. Algeria was one country in Northwest Africa, Iraq in the Middle East, and Egypt in Northeast Africa were among the countries visited by these explorers searching for things. They found date palms, seedlings suitable for cultivation in the U.S.'s climate, particularly south and southwest. Among them was botanist David Fairchild, who decided to travel to Baghdad, and his colleagues Walter Swingler visited Algeria in 1900 and studied the date growing conditions there. And they realized quickly that you can't just bring seeds, you have to bring actual plants that have taken some root. And they're, challenged.
So they won't the seeds won't germinate.
They will, but you run the risk of not knowing what direction the tree will go, or the potential foul. They could go wrong. Something could go wrong.
I see. Okay.
I thought it would be the other way around. It would be safer to bring seed if that's the case. So now these are all grown. Mostly 90% of these dates are grown in Cachula Valley. Mm-hmm. And you and I were talking about brands, but this was in that valley. The few things happened last century. America was seeing the Middle East as a romanticized little adventures, and so the new varieties were named something other than what they came with. But in 1922. More interest in Egyptian and Egyptology stuff had created more interest on the part of consumers here in the U.S. And the three varieties that came here was the medjool, which is it's a larger, dark brown, and mm-hmm. very sweet. And it had the most favorable conditions here in the U.S. because there's water. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sun.
Yes.
Where in other places around the Middle East, they had much less water, and they were more, maybe stronger flavor, but drier, and they were not as caramel taste
right.
of flavor. So it's the most popular one here in the consumed in the U.S., and it's worth noting that all medjool trees in the United States originated from single oases in Morocco.
Oh, interesting.
This one little, and because of conditions... their condition in Morocco had fallen on bad times, so now they're thinking of taking some back from, preservation of over a century in the U.S. to reintroduce them to Morocco and in North Africa. Mm-hmm. The Dejle Nour is another relatively dry texture, really rich flavor date that also came from Algeria and Tunisia. But the Barhi originated from southern Iraq, close to the Kuwaiti border down there, mm-hmm. and was eaten before it's completely ripe. And it has a very strong flavor, like unripened persimmons.
Oh,
but later
okay.
it gets a little darker color, and they're unbelievably delicious, smaller, much smaller size than the medjool. So these three are planted here in the U.S. and enjoyed in many different places, sell them online.
So are these each, they grow on different cultivar types of date trees?
Yes.
Okay.
From the same gene, from the same genome, or the family tree, the classification.
They're not actually like different species, right?
No,
they're just sort of varieties.
Varieties within, and there are way many, many more, but those are the ones that came to the U.S. and they were considered as potentially commercially viable for food sources.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to another episode of Salamat, your weekly tour of Arab and Arab-American news, culture, issues, art, music, date cultivars, and whatever else we feel like talking about. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for the Pachyderm Parade coming up next here on WORT 89.9 FM. In the meantime, we will bid you farewell by saying, as always, in Arabic,
Assalamu alaikum.
In English, peace be upon you.
هذا كافي صراع طائفي يقسم بلادي بلادي أهل الكتاب أمتي دمائي وروحي فداكي مازلت طفلة جارية
I like ice cream and I like cake and I like you to be my friend be my friend and you can be my friend on Monday March 24th by listening in to the Access Hour at 7 o'clock where I'll be playing my original songs and hopefully making you laugh on WORT 89.9 FM. Be my friend.